And the same-os got the contract.
Mm-hmm.
I felt pretty good about being a predictor, mm-hmm. But I felt very bad for the university because it wasn't served with this process at all. Mm-hmm. It couldn't. No, it's ridiculous. I think one of the other issues that I felt very strongly on was to establish a code of conduct for the principal administrators. And I would wanted very much to put the board in that also. Well, I had suggested that to a couple of the administrators, if we don't start work on this, it's going to be a lengthy process. It's complicated. The board doesn't understand it. And we got to get started on it. Something I wanted to get done before I left the board. And so we started a process. First thing that became apparent to me was there wasn't going to be anything enacted if the board was included in it. Because they said, look, we're elected by the people. And we're not, if you put us in this, what it means is there'll be a bunch of whistleblowers who will be trying to damage us politically. And besides, we had a couple of board members who were in conflict. So, the first thing I had to do was to assure my colleagues that they were not going to be part of this ethical standard. And then we began to review different alternatives. I took it upon myself to become involved in the drafting of this document. Now that was unheard of. To have a trustee sit with administrators and prepare language. It happened that I'd been deeply involved in the establishment of the conflicts of interest policy that the 1963 Constitution required that the legislature do. So I had some familiarity with the issues that would be involved in when you're dealing with conflicts. and I worked with the general counsel for the university, Bob Noto, and also talked with the vice president for finance and his years of experience as a dean in this area.
That is Fred Poston?
Yeah. It was so distressful for these administrators to have a trustee again moving forward on a policy question and intimately being involved in the design of the policy. It was so unheard of for them. They simply could not adjust to it. Noto could. The others couldn't. They thought it was a horrible precedent. And the issues that I would talk with in Noto and say, I want this in the proposal that will come to the board as a beginning discussion draft. About half of those never showed up. They got sabotaged along the way. The president had his cabinet sort of intervened in this. The deans got very nervous. Other people in the administration got very nervous because of potential conflicts that they were involved in. Or one case, a spouse. So the last meeting of the board that I attended was a retreat of the board in which we discussed the issues here. And the question came up as to how we would proceed and whether we would have votes to amend or to change any of the proposed verbiage. And I wanted votes because I wanted to know where my colleagues stood on the issue. Mm-hmm. On these various issues as we raised them, as we went through the draft. The draft was very benign. And I said, you know, there are going to be several important questions here that what we should do is simply a member of the board puts forth a proposal and it's voted up or down. The president didn't want that. He said, I don't think we have to do that. We'll just work from consensus. I said, this isn't, this is a kind of a miniature legislative body. You don't, we can't work from a consensus. We don't know what the consensus is. Mm-hmm. So we have to explain what each amendment is, have a vote on it, one way or the other, and move forward. Go right through the document. No, I don't think that's necessary. We've never done that before. No reason to do it. And I knew, looking around at my colleagues, that it was hopeless. The same old guy, friend of mine, said, well, you know, he told me afterwards, well, if you'd had four votes, I'd have been there.
You'd be done another
five. You know, I always think of you as the guy that would have been there if I had the votes. Well, the bottom line is, we're a year later, no ethics policy has come out of the board. No ethics policy will come out of the board. No conflict of interest. And the university is poorly served.
How about Detroit College of Law? Were you involved in, you were on the board, either board at the time when the proposal,
I was on the MSU board, sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and very supportive of it,
mm-hmm.
and encouraged the administration to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Weiss was very, very positive in that regard, very helpful. He really led the way for MSU, or excuse me, for DCL,
mm-hmm.
and I was very supportive. And I served on, President and I, it's fair to say, had such disagreement on the respective roles of a president and a board that it was difficult for us to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
He would argue that the Constitution didn't mean what it said. Indeed, the board did not have final authority in terms of the university finances and policy. I don't know who he thought did,
mm-hmm.
but I assume he believed the president. So we had a basic philosophical disagreement as to the respective roles of the parties. And sometimes the board, in a very informal way, was able to affect what was going on. Weiss and myself were more proactive than the other board members. But at the same time, the other board members, several of them would privately speak with the president and say, don't just reject that out of hand. Listen to what's being said. There's some value here. He was very reluctant to go down the, initially, very reluctant to go down the road of affiliation with DCL. He moved off that as soon as he found a way to effectuate a management of all of the issues, a control.
Mm-hmm.
He really is a control person, and he's not a collegial, work in a cooperative fashion. He's an old-fashioned manager in many respects, most in fact, given over to temper tantrums, sadly enough.
Mm.
So anyhow, that's the story.
Were you aware of any previous attempts for Michigan State to get a law school?
Well, I think there had been some conversations in the legislature going back a number of years. The other law schools in the state were not sympathetic to that.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature said, we don't need a new law school. And that's why it made some sense to affiliate with DCL.
Mm-hmm.
I think in order to get that accomplished, merger, partnership, as it was then described, the university agreed with the opponents of MSU having a law school of any kind, that there would be no state financing for the law school. I think that was a mistake. It was a terrible price to pay, and it's very unfair to the students who are attending DCL at MSU, MSU at DCL, or currently.
What are the named viewer?
I think, and there's no question that eventually the DCL part of this will fade away, mm-hmm. and it'll be the law school at MSU, MSU Law School. Mm-hmm. But I think that that without state financing, it's going to be a marginal school, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. The tuition is excessive, they're doing well, but they would be doing much better if they had per pupil grant.
Do you think when you were, would you have been able to attend school, law school there without GI Bill when you were?
No.
The GI Bill was critical in your
case. Totally enabled me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think, Larry?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We got about 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay.
Or less.
You talked a little bit about the issue of agriculture and
yes.
Having come from an agricultural district, born on a farm, your own experience. How would you say that Michigan State, the focus on agriculture, has developed during your experience? Has it changed at all?
Well, I think modern technology, especially communication, has made it much easier for the university to relate to the producers, the farmers, and to the agribusiness people as well, but principally to the farmers. The kinds of internet opportunities to get the latest information and to use the university programs for finance have been of immense assistance to most of the farmers who take advantage of this, and ever-increasing numbers of them do. Then, of course, you got the research component of the university that I think is demonstrated that Michigan State is probably the number one research agricultural college university in the nation. Some great competitors out there, mm-hmm. Ohio State and mm-hmm. Iowa. Mm-hmm.
Did you find in Washington, was that recognized, that we were a leader in many areas?
I think that's the case, mm-hmm. yes. And we do very well in the competitive area of research in the Department of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think we lead all other universities in that regard, all other agricultural schools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The issue of technology has obviously been important in the last 10 years in particular. Students now, this fall, are being required to either bring a computer or have a computer in class. What, when your experience on the board, what was your position about that?
I supported it,
uh-huh.
But with caveat, the way the administration was going was every student would be required to have a laptop,
mm-hmm.
and I felt that laptops were expensive at that point,
mm-hmm.
and that the administration was moving on the belief that since this was would be an add-on to their student loans, mm-hmm. Finance, hey, it's okay, but there were a lot of students who weren't participating in the loan program, mm-hmm. and the key here really is to make them computer literate. For some students, I think it is a necessity to have a portable,
mm-hmm.
The engineering, the science students especially. Mm-hmm. But those students who are in a more broad-based program, the social sciences, for instance, while they're helpful for note-taking, you could make that case.
Mm-hmm.
I think the option should be left with the student. And if they've got a computer at home that's functioning and they want it, it's a desktop, and they want to bring it and use it, I think that should be their choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think as university gets some experience in this area, I'm always ready to change my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is I don't have to worry about that now.
Yeah.
But I think that it just was a common sense approach,
mm-hmm.
and rather than dictate that type, that it had to be a portable,
mm-hmm.
I get concerned. There's another element here too, and I'm my father taught me several things, and one of the things he taught me was if you want to know what's going on, follow the money. Another thing he firmly believed in, don't pay a hell of a lot of attention to what they're saying, watch what they do. And something else was that money is a factor that you can't ignore in decisions, what motivates people. Mm-hmm. So I thought, in this situation, what is it that motivates them? Well, the principal laptop manufacturer at that point was Dell. Mm-hmm. Dell was very instrumental in getting the law specifically to provide for computers. Mm-hmm. And they hope to capture the market because they do make a good product. It's mm-hmm. also expensive. Mm-hmm. And they have a good relationship with many of the universities around the country, mm-hmm. including MSU. Yeah. So I that was troublesome for me. Mm-hmm. Is you know, these vendors, people run around damning government, but I'll tell you, when the Treasury is there, it's the first place people go. Mm-hmm. I always recall a guy in my hometown. I was in the Congress, and I recall reading in the this number of years ago, reading in the newspaper that he was appealing his assessment by the city assessor, and he had a business, and he thought that they had over evaluated him, so he marched into the equalization board and got his assessment somewhat lower. It was only a matter of within a year, the city had decided to put a new bridge in, made that decision, and located the new bridge where they would have to take his property. His property went from his $200,000 at most to $1 million. And I wasn't aware of what the terms of the agreement was between he and the city until he called me. And he said, look, the money is in Lansing, and there was federal money involved. Mm-hmm. And he said, they're just kind of sitting on it. He said, Bob, that's my $1 million, and every day it's costing me money that they're drawing interest on my money. Mm-hmm. And I want to get it deposited, and I want to draw the interest. And I said, mm-hmm. Well, that makes some sense. And then I started to laugh myself about how he, when it was being assessed, it wasn't worth spit.
Yeah.
But when it came time to deal with the government,
yeah,
and mm-hmm. a treasury, mm-hmm. government treasury, it was worth five times mm-hmm. what he had estimated. So that was a good illustration of how mm-hmm. people look at government, and they see an opportunity there. Mm-hmm. And the vendors are always looking for the sweetheart arrangement. Mm-hmm. Corporations have to deal with that mentality with their purchasing agents. They have to deal with the fact that the vendors are always looking to get one leg up mm-hmm. and make special friends among the purchasing agents. Most corporations have a policy in which their purchasing agents have be very careful in their relationship with these vendors. Mm-hmm. And they're not permitted to accept any gifts or tokens of appreciation. At least it influenced their decisions.
In looking at the money issue, the tuition guarantee, that phrase seemed to mm-hmm. come to symbolize a lot in President McPherson's administration. What was your position on that originally?
And I strongly supported it. Mm-hmm. I had been telling my colleagues on the board that good times weren't going to roll forever. Mm-hmm. And that we should begin to develop policies that would deal with a situation where if we had an economic downturn and the university budget was cut right in the middle of the school year, mm-hmm. how are we going to deal with that? Mm-hmm. Nobody would approach that issue. Nobody.
No, now they are.
I could get them to even think about it, let alone develop a policy. Mm-hmm. In fact, I actually amended the budget proposal that came to us from the administration and said that they would develop and submit to the board within a year policies to deal with the process of reducing expenditures in the event that the Constitution mandated a reduction in the middle of the school year. They were appalled. Mm-hmm. Nothing came of that, of course. They never went to the policy question of how are we going to set in motion a process that will ensure a careful review of programs mm-hmm. and what would go and what would stay. Mm-hmm. And Cecil Mackey, of course, went all through that, you know. Mm-hmm. And it cost him his presidency. Mm-hmm. He believes it did. Some of the board members at that time told me that, no, he made a misjudgment. He did have the support on the board, not for the policy, but for his presidency. Mm-hmm. He assumed because they refused to abolish the school of nursing and some other initiatives that I don't recall now, mm-hmm. that it was a rejection of him as a president, mm-hmm. and that he didn't have the votes on the board. Mm-hmm. Well, he may not have had the votes for to abolish the school of nursing, mm-hmm. but that didn't mean that they were rejecting he as the president. Right. I think there was a little confusion there in his mind. Mm-hmm.
In looking back at your career as a student, and then even in Congress, and then later on the board, your experience at Michigan State, is there anything that comes to mind as being, you see as most important?
Well, there are a lot of important things here. And I think one can never lose sight of why the institution is there. And that is, it has a mission that touches and affects everyone in the state of Michigan as a land-grant institution to bring the knowledge of agriculture, of industrial skills, and of research to the people of the state, whether they're a student or a non-student. Secondly, the role of education, of taking the masses, educating the masses. You got to go.
Okay.
Your carriage is here.
Okay. I think that's a good point to end.
That's a good way to end. Thank you.
And I appreciate your time and especially sharing your insights for the project. Thank you.
Thank you.